Chapter 11. Terra, the Imperial Palace. Dawn broke over the Imperial Palace, and once more Drakkan Vangarich found himself enjoying the feeble rays that felt their way through the hive world smog of the capital. Another dawn meant that he was still breathing. He had lived another day and might live through another still. His enemies were either dead or lived on in frustration and fear. In a life of death, there was a great deal that could be accomplished in a single day. Vangarich sat for a while. Somewhere above his head, across the vastness of the void, men and supermen were dying. Alien monsters were being fought. The destiny of empires was being decided. And yet, for Vangarich, the beast, the horrific enemy who had brought the Imperium to its knees, had become a necessary evil. The greenskin apocalypse was a warning to humanity not to become complacent, that the Imperium of mankind was but one of many powers vying for control of the galaxy. There would only ever be war, and the Imperium had to be ready for such challenges, with capable leaders worthy of the God Emperor's trust. Men like Thane, like Courland, like himself. Men who would not flinch from doing what had to be done. The Imperium had always been an unwieldy entity. Even with his warlord sons to oversee peace across his realm, the Emperor had allowed his people and his domain to slip away from him. And now, barely 1,000 years since the terrible civil war that had turned the Imperium into a galactic battleground, the rot had returned. A self-righteous torpor dominated everything. Terra had long been buried in scrolls, reports, and data slates burdened with more information than could ever be read or responded to. Mars was a runaway monitor train with no one at the controls. The planets of the Imperium were like fruit spoiling on a tree. Heresy and mutation were a canker running wild. One by one, worlds and sectors were forgotten and allowed to shrivel on the stalk. Meanwhile, the aggressive alien species of the galaxy would routinely tear through the branches, gorging themselves on the precious fruit. Species like the orcs that had been forgotten as backwater barbarians until the beast had arisen to lead them. Whereas Horus had been the half-forgotten threat of the past and the beast the peril of the stormy present, Vangarich wondered what other dangers lay ahead for humanity. What revenants and warped monstrosities might the dread eye of terror vomit forth? What of the Xenos? The orcs had smashed the Imperium into a flaming wreck. What alien civilizations, forgotten, long dead or dying, were awaiting a cataclysmic resurgence? What of the species yet to achieve sentience, and monsters of the void yet to be discovered? Vangarich suspected that even if humanity survived the beast, a weakened Imperium would embolden other warlords and galactic predators to take their opportunity for glory. Every broken world was a smouldering mountain of rubble in whose shadow the wretched citizens of the Imperium would toil to rebuild their cathedrals, their cities, and their lives. A living advertisement in stone and flesh that humanity was vulnerable to attack. Such disturbing thoughts had led a restless Vangarich to walk the walls of the palace. Finding himself in the inner arcades, he watched the bleary sun break the horizon from the investiture. Here, the mighty Primarchs had been immortalized in stone. Mighty no more, they were now but memories. Their statues stood on towering plinths, bearing stone weapons and sculpted in poses of action and agency. It was the way the Imperium chose to remember them, the communal lie. The feeble-minded had little time for uncomfortable truths. From the lowliest gutter wretch to the lords of surrounding smog-wreathed spires, all carried the memory of the Primarchs with pride. They were the sons of the Emperor, the warlords responsible for a golden age. Their shoulders, like pillars, had held the Imperium up above the flood of alien filth that washed through the galaxy. They did not remember them as the squabbling siblings they had truly been, their hearts beating with jealousies and resentments that ran even deeper than those of mortals. They saw them as the pinnacle of human development, magnificent specimens with minds of tactical superiority and the engineered bodies of demigods. That everything about them had been superhuman, including the bitterness and hatred they harbored for one another. It amused Vangarich somewhat that the ancient architects had positioned the Primarch's plinths in a ring about the circular arcade, so that they might regard one another stony-faced in an eternal standoff. Their choices and their inability to act until it was too late had been the doom of men 1,000 years before. The Primarchs were gone now, all of them, and in their place sat pompous oafs on thrones, great not of mind or body, but of reach. The High Lords of Terror had unrivalled power and influence. Like the Primarchs, the Lords could damn the Imperium with a single decision. The galaxy was theirs to neglect. As the rising of the Beast had proven, their hunger for power and petty politicking had made the Imperium vulnerable. They had made humanity weak. Their existence had been, was, and would continue to be, a threat to everything the Emperor had worked so hard to build. Lansung and Veriolt held the Imperium to ransom with their ships and their soldiers. Kubik's true allegiance belonged not to the Imperium, but to the Machine God and Mars. Venand was free to pursue any dark agenda she wished, ready to see corruption in all who stood in her way, while Vernor Zek was content in his blindness to the actual corruption before his very eyes. As for Gibran, Sark, Anwar, Tull, and Eckarth, their crimes were dangerous incompetence. Their entangled institutions were a house of tarot cards upon which the future of the Imperium was written. When they were at their most needed, their structures had nearly collapsed, and the dominion of mankind with them. This category would no doubt also include whoever was elected to fill the seat of Ecclesiarch, for there were only such men to choose from. Who could know which of these parasites would be chosen for the seat of Lord Commander? All would crave such a position, for leeches always sought out the richest veins from which to feed. This would not stand, Vangarich decided. He would not be remembered by history so. He would not be some footnote at the bottom of a vellum scroll buried in a dusty vault. He would not be cursed for his inaction. He was there, a frequenter of the palace, a member of the council, an entrusted servant of the Emperor. He could achieve more in a day than even the most powerful Imperial subjects could in a score of lifetimes. The Imperium had been brought to its knees and might not survive at all. Even if Thane returned victorious, it could not be rebuilt upon the weak foundations the High Lords of Terror would provide. The Emperor's dominion in the galaxy had to be inviolable and absolute. It had to be strong, and such strength came from an adamantium will, the will to act and see the Imperium's future preserved. Vangarich stopped to look up. Mighty Vulcan, cast in stone, stood above him, his hammer held high. The expression on his face was one of potent resolution, like a smouldering volcano building to blow. On the next towering plinth along, Rogel Dorn cast his grim, unsmiling visage down upon the Grand Master, dour, intractable, indomitable. So many of his sons had been lost in the war against the Beast. Those of Dorn's bloodline, more than anyone else, had paid for the High Lord's abuses. Looking up at him now, Vangarich found it uncanny how closely Courland had resembled his genic father. Vangarich thought on Courland's execution of Mesring and nodded to himself. He considered Vulcan's wise words and his condemnation of the High Lords. A Primarch had denounced the Council as unfit for purpose. The son of a Primarch had demonstrated how such a problem might achieve resolution. They were not traitors to the Imperium, or madmen. They were heroes. The Grand Master of Assassins shivered as the last of the dawn's scattered rays penetrated his deep hood. A cold front had moved in over the palace, carrying with it dirty clouds and acidic rain that sizzled upon the marble. The capital was in for a storm, it seemed. It might have been a new dawn above the palace and for the Imperium, but thunder was rolling in. That was Shadow of Ulanor by Rob Sanders, read by Gareth Armstrong. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2016.